Inspired by IMDb and Sight and Sound, Return of the Disc presents the Top 250 Movies List, a mini-series.
So welcome back to Return of the Disc. As always, I'm Dan, and joining me on this quest is, you guys know him from episode 5 of Return of the Disc, where we went through Tobe Hooper films and John Carpenter's The Fog. We went through The Funhouse, The Fog, and Tenebrae by Argento. Please welcome back Tom.
Hello.
We decided to go crazy. We had done a 250 list in 2016, I believe, on the Nerd Files podcast. And you kept messaging me like, when are we going to do another one? When are we going to do another one?
I became really obsessed with making my list.
So. Yeah, this was a painful experience for me. Hopefully it's better to present them, but it was tough to really narrow it down because I'm constantly looking at my collection. So I'll just go ahead and tell you my criteria I had. I had to have it in my collection, my physical media collection, or it didn't count. And so that was my big thing. And I'm not grouping any movies. I'm just, if it's Star Wars, it's from 77, you know, Empire Strikes Back is, you know, the sequel. Not doing the numbers of episodes. So, Tom, what was your criteria going into this new list?
Well, I kind of cheated. I put multiple movies in a single slot, a whole bunch. And I kind of just did that because I thought it made sense for them to be seen as a whole. So, like, usually it's because, like, there's a continuing story, or for some reason I thought that they were kind of connected. I also included some stuff that I'm like, you could kind of say it's not technically a movie. I have two documentaries, one's theatrically released, so I think like for sure would count. But the other one was released only on streaming and only had like a section of it screened in theaters. So like, you know, that doesn't totally count. But I have it on here anyway, cause I love it. I have one short film and a miniseries cut of a movie. So I'm like, you know, those aren't totally films. Wow. But I wanted to include them anyway. And I just wanted to say this quick little like caveat. My list has some movies on it who are made by or starred bad people. For example, there are several films directed by Roman Polanski, child rapist. The Harry Potter movies are on here. There's several films starring Johnny Depp and Kevin Spacey, a couple of directed by Mel Gibson. There's a bunch of movies produced by Harvey Weinstein. And, you know, there's probably some that I don't remember or don't know about, like people doing bad things on it.
Clark Gable, maybe. I don't know. You know, who knows?
Oh, yeah. Well, I actually don't have any Clark Gable. But, like, The Wizard of Oz is made by a Nazi sympathizer. So, like, I mean, you know, it's all relative. Like, I guess, like, if you tried to get rid of all of it, there would be nothing left. Which is unfortunate.
It is.
But it's just the fact is there's just so many people who work on a film, you know.
I agree with that. It's kind of separating the art from the artist, and you know, filmmaking is a group effort. And these lists, you know, I like all the movies that I have on the list, or they wouldn't be on my list. And I haven't seen every movie in the world. This making this list was like, okay, I need to see more movies. Because you know, there's some movies early on here, like today's episode, where we're talking about our bottom 25. Like, people are going to be like, "What in the world? Why do you have this on your list?" But it's on there. But you know, but it's our list, so that's the beauty of it. Like, if you guys out there want to make a list, feel free to post them in the comments. And you know, there's no right or wrong with this. Who wants to start? I figured we'll each present 5 films, go back and forth between, you know, presenting 5 films each until we hit 50 total, which could be different films. I would be shocked if we match any films today.
Yeah, I kind of doubt it. It didn't happen last time. We did get within like 2 or 3, I think, a couple times, but.
So we could be talking about 500 different movies potentially throughout this whole
movie. I think there's going to be some of them that are the same.
I do too.
Yeah. But I think it'll be less than last time. Last time we had, I mean, it was 2016, but we had been living together earlier in the year. And so we were coming off a year of living with each other. So I think we had a lot of the same movies. I also had, like, I guess I didn't really write this down, but like, I also had two things that I really wanted to do was, like, I wanted to make sure that I included movies that I loved that other people might not care for as much. Cause like, I love like campy midnight movies and stuff. And like, most people would not rank those very highly, but I love them. So I'm going to like talk about, you know, all those sorts of movies. And then the other thing was, I didn't want to include movies just because everyone loves them. You know, like if I was going to include it, I wanted to make sure that like, I'm including this because I care about it this much, not because other people are loving it.
I'll give you an example of what's not on my list. Shawshank Redemption is not on my list, guys. So that's one that everybody loves. It's okay. I've seen it now, but
you hadn't seen it.
I think it's overrated. I hadn't seen it like 6 years ago, or 7 years ago. But I saw it a couple years ago, and okay. So I mean, that's one already. So I mean, I can already hear the internet screaming in the distance, but that's okay. That's, you know, the beauty of it is it's our list. It's our picks.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I consider these, like, these are my favorite films. If I had to make an objective argument for what are the best movies of all time, the list might be a little different. But like, you know, everyone's taste is different, and that's kind of the beauty of it. And yeah, I think we had a lot of fun last time, like, because our tastes are different. But I think this time, like, is going to be even more pronounced.
It's going to be wilder. I think both of our tastes, and we've just grown too as people.
Yeah,
and we've seen a lot more movies. At least I know I have. I'm sure you have too. Especially when we had the pandemic, we had more time to watch. And
Yeah, it's not on here, but I saw Sound of Music, Mary Poppins, Ian showed me a bunch of movies that I'd never seen, and I was like, oh, hell yeah. And then I showed him a bunch of movies that he was like, what the hell?
That's awesome. All right, so who wants to start? I'll give you the floor if you want to start, or if you want me to.
I'll start because I think it'll be funny. Okay.
250.
Okay. So my number 250. Should I read them all out, or just like read the description too with each one?
Yeah, let's just go title and description.
Okay. So my number 250 is The Shawshank Redemption and The Green Mile.
And The Green Mile?
Well, yeah, they're by the same director. Okay, well, why don't I just read it? Frank Darabont adapts two Stephen King period pieces set in prisons. Shawshank focuses on the prisoners, while Green Mile focuses on the guards. Highly emotional film, sweeping epics. Morgan Freeman, Tim Robbins, and Tom Hanks are excellent. So, yeah, I mean, they're the same director. They're the same author, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I think they are kind of two sides of the same coin. Because, like, I had them separate for a long time, and then I was like, you know, they're very similar films. I also don't expect The Green Mile to be on your list. But,
no, but yeah, I haven't seen that one. I've seen clips of it. I haven't seen the whole thing.
Michael Clarke Duncan is really good. I should have mentioned him on here, but I was really only mentioning the leads. But Michael Clarke Duncan is incredible in The Green Mile. I mean, of course, I love Stephen King. He does fall under, like, he loves to use his magical Negro trope. This one, I guess, like, he... you know, I was going to say that, like, this one, he doesn't really like, so like, usually it would be more apt to put it to Mr. Hollerand of The Shining, but I'm like, but he does kind of give Tom Hanks development. Anyway, that's a whole other can of worms, but I love both of those movies. I think they're really good. These were a last phase edition. I moved one up last night and I was like, okay, I guess I'm just going to throw it on there.
That's great. That's great. Okay. All right, what's next?
Okay, cool. That's 248. These are done in like the craziest order. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I have marked the pages though, so it goes hopefully a little faster. 249 is Sherlock Holmes, 2009. Robert Downey Jr., Jude Law, Rachel McAdams, and Mark Strong star in Guy Ritchie's adaptation based on the characters created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, a more comedic, action-oriented interpretation of the character. This is a movie I'd love to put on the background as I write and was a favorite when it came out.
Interesting. Okay. Cool.
Oh, I should have been holding these up. I literally...
I was going to ask if you had the Green Mile 2-pack there.
Well, no, I have them as two separate things, but let me... this way. Yeah.
Now, I do have a 3-pack with the Green Mile, Shawshank Redemption, and the Majestic, and I bought it because I like Majestic better than those two, so...
I've never seen the Majestic. I don't even know what it's about. I'm assuming a hotel?
It's a movie theater.
Oh, okay. Okay, so those are the two that I missed, and number 248 is Rocket Man.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Dexter Fletcher's Elton John biopic starring Taron Egerton, a musical retelling of Elton's life and career. Beautiful, well done, and very emotional. I love the framing device of Elton in therapy, taking off pieces of his costume as he reveals pieces of himself to the audience. Trippy and fantastical, a true experience.
Yeah, it was a lot different than like the Queen biopic.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's, which is funny because like he finished that movie after, what's his name? Bryan Singer had his meltdown.
Right.
Okay. And so then 247 is John Wick 1-3. Keanu Reeves' latest action franchise sees him as an assassin who got out, returned to a world of assassins. Chad Stanislavski's stunt direction makes the movies responsible for some of the best action sequences in recent memory. John Wick Chapter 4 has not come out yet, so I'm sure it will have by the time these air, or by the time you're listening to it, but...
Oh, it was amazing.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it.
I was like, how did you see it? It doesn't come out for like another 2 months.
I'm hearing good things. I'm assuming it's amazing, so...
I'm assuming, too. I mean, like, I hope so. And at some point, I'm hoping that, like, what? There's going to be, like, 5 films total. Like, it's John Wick 1-5.
They filmed the spinoff, Ballerina.
They're always trying to do a spinoff. Because Atomic Blonde was a spinoff. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
And then they're having the Continental show with Mel Gibson, your guy. We'll see if that happens, but that's what I've heard.
I don't know. I don't really need a spinoff, but whatever. Okay. And then 246, The Ghost Rider, 2010. My favorite of Roman Polanski's Exile films. The Ghost Rider is a moody political thriller starring Ewan McGregor, who is hired to ghostwrite the memoirs of a former British prime minister played by Pierce Brosnan, who comes under investigation for war crimes. I look back more and more fondly on this film as a time capsule of post 9/11 paranoia and Patriot Act backlash. Brosnan's self-gratifying line about if I was prime minister again, I'd put 2 lines at airports encapsulates the freedom versus safety argument more succinctly than I've ever heard it expressed.
Oh.
Yeah.
This interesting. I think I watched that when I was too young to watch it.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it can be boring if you're not like down for it. And also there's very little explanation of what's going on. You, in some cases, like a lot of it, you have to kind of read between the lines of what happened. I mean, like they do reveal at the end a big twist, but I mean, who killed the previous ghostwriter? They never explicitly say who did it. You just kind of have to be like, oh, okay. I guess it was them.
All right, so that's 5 from you.
Yeah.
All right, now I'm going to start with my 250.
Hell yeah.
number 250 is Rock and Roll High School, 1979, directed by Alan Arkush and Joe Dante, produced by Roger Corman under his New World Pictures. It's a high energy comedy featuring the Ramones.
Ooh.
So you get a lot of Ramones songs in here. And it's basically about a school rebelling against the norm, with the norm, the principal being against rock and roll. So, and what's funny is it's the main lady from Eating Raoul and the and Paul Bartel is also a teacher in here. So you have those two collaborations in here, and it's a fun musical comedy. Really enjoyed it. It was a recent discovery. So that's my 250.
Hell yeah.
Next one. 249. Wedding Crashers from 2005. The first movie I saw five times in theaters. Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson have insane comedic timing as two womanizers who fall head over heels for Rachel McAdams and Isla Fisher. So who wouldn't? Still a fun movie to me. I don't quite love it as much as I did when I was a teenager, but I find it still very humorous. And yeah, good time. Also have Christopher Walken in there. I have some good lines. My next one, 248. 2007's Disturbia. The year Shia LaBeouf was hailed the next Tom Hanks. I enjoy this Rear Window remake mostly because of Shia's performance as a teenager on House Arrest. So yeah, he carries the movie coming off of like Even Stevens and stuff. And 2007 was kind of the year of Shia coming out. He had Transformers, would follow Disturbia. After Disturbia became a hit, Spielberg was like, he's going to be the next Tom Hanks. Let's cast him in Crystal Skull. And we know how that went. But I enjoy it. I think it's a nice little companion piece to Rear Window. My next one, 247, is, speaking of Transformers, 2018's Bumblebee. Transformers spinoff set in 1987, starring Haley Steinfeld. We learn about Bumblebee's origins and this grounded Michael Bay detoxed adventure. So no Michael Bay this time. The only thing close to Michael Bay, dialogue-wise, is John Cena playing the bad guy. But I thoroughly enjoyed this. I think they should have named it maybe Transformers Bumblebee. It wasn't quite the hit, and now it seems like they're going back to the Michael Bay style for these movies, but really enjoyed this. Haley Steinfeld's one of my favorite actresses working today. My next one, 246, another movie set in 87, 2009's Adventureland. Summer of 87 carnival comedy starring Jesse Eisenberg, Kirsten Stewart, charming, funny, and real. Excellent supporting cast led by Ryan Reynolds, and a soundtrack filled with 80s pop. So it's a nice little coming of age, summer job, what are you going to do with your life type movie set in the 80s. Really enjoy this one.
I like that one a lot.
That's the first five. So you've seen that one?
Yeah, I've seen that one in Disturbia. The other three I have not. So my 245 is The Favorite by Yorgos Lanthimos. Yorgos Lanthimos is a lesbian political drama comedy period piece starring Olivia Colman, Rachel Weisz, and Emma Stone. This movie owes much to Kubrick's Barry Lyndon, but this doesn't diminish its cheeky appeal. I just love this one. It was really fun.
Yeah.
244 is a twofer. It is Terrifier and Terrifier 2. From Damien Leone comes a new horror icon in Art the Clown, a quasi-immortal murderer, featuring grotesque, brutal, sadistic, and creative kills and visually stunning set pieces. The Terrifier films are a true treat for horror fans.
Nice.
And he's got three coming. I have no idea if it's going to be a trilogy or if he's just going to keep going. It's interesting because I'm wondering, like, there's some lore questions that I have that he has not answered yet, but even so, the movies are very enjoyable. Then one. Okay, so I don't know. Yeah. They're pretty brutal. 243 I don't have on disc. It is The Phantom of the Opera, 1925, the silent version. The Universal silent film starring Lon Chaney Sr. This film boasts the iconic mask pull-off scene, an iconic makeup, plus a beautifully hand-painted masquerade ball sequence. I prefer my edit where I set the film to David Bowie music.
Is that still on YouTube?
It's still on YouTube. Dude, I watch that one all the time. Then 242 is Tropic Thunder and Zoolander. A pair of Ben Stiller comedies that parry Hollywood and fashion culture respectively. Fantastic supporting cast in each. Both films have held up surprisingly well.
All right.
So yeah, I enjoy these two. They're both
another combination.
Yeah. I told you I cheated.
I know. I'm fully aware now.
Okay. 241 is We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Okay.
Lynn Ramsey's school shooter drama starring Tilda Swinton and Ezra Miller. Wow, is this movie depressing but so real. It taps into the pain of a mother of a mass murderer and how she can't stop wondering if she could have stopped him if she had acted sooner. Just rewatched this last week because I'd only seen it once. One criteria I did have is I have to have watched the movie at least twice to include it on the list. Because I think the second time through, you do watch it a little bit different. This one I kept in the same spot after I rewatched it, but it wasn't as hard to get through the second time, but I was able to like really look at the beautiful like artistry of the film, but
wow. All right. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was 241.
Gotcha. All right, my 245. St. Vincent. Bill Murray carries this film by the number. It's a by the numbers film carried by Bill Murray, who's a mentor in this coming of age dramedy, proving no matter how old or grumpy you can still find redemption. So I just love seeing like Bill Murray back and hanging out with children and inspiring them. And I could actually tolerate Melissa McCarthy in this film. So, it's my 245. 244 is an oldie. Mr. and Mrs. Smith, or Mr. Smith, just Mr. Smith.
I want to see that crossover, though.
Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. It was my first experience to a filibuster. We watched this in school. James Stewart is phenomenal as Jefferson Smith. I just wanted to have a little James Stewart on my list, and this is one of the ones that I owned. So, yeah, if you want to learn more about filibusting, that's the one. 243 is a controversial title. Tron Legacy from 2010. Better than the original Tron in every way. The score by Daft Punk is perfect. Jeff Bridges returns as Kevin Flynn. We see the destruction of what an AI program could do. Really enjoy this film still to today. I really love the soundtrack. It's just the visually stunning and something that I want an easy watch to kind of, I don't know, I guess go psychedelic. That's the one. All right, 242, The Irishman from 2019. If you can get past the aging, it's the perfect ending to the Martin Scorsese gangster verse. Joe Pesci returns and steals every scene he's in. De Niro and Pacino go head-to-head in this examination of the aging gangster, also set behind the Hoffa story. Yeah, I really enjoyed this film, and seeing it on the big screen with you was great. And it grew on me as I watched it over a couple times. And now I think it's, you know, it's up there with the rest of Scorsese's gangsterverse. All right, 241. Boys in the Hood from 1991. The feature debut by John Singleton. It's a coming-of-age crime drama with an all-star cast, including Cuba Gooding Jr., Angela Bassett, Ice Cube, Lawrence Fishburne, and Morris Chestnut. Gives us an honest portrayal of life in urban 1980s. So, heartbreaking story, well worth your time if you guys haven't seen Boys in the Hood.
I still need to see that one.
Yeah, I definitely recommend that one.
Hell yeah.
All right. We're on the right path here.
Yeah. Okay. So 240?
240.
Okay. This one fell out of order.
Okay. So far, these lists are diverse from each other.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, so far, I think there's one from your list that has made it onto mine higher.
Same with yours.
Okay, cool.
For me.
All right, so number 240 is The Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons. Ron Howard's adaptation of Dan Brown's controversial novel starring Tom Hanks. Looking back, the controversy is sort of funny because these movies are essentially slightly more grounded versions of Indiana Jones set in the modern, but they're also more dramatic and truly take an interesting look at history, albeit fictionalized in some cases, and philosophy. These movies were part of my own personal rebellion at my Catholic grade school, so they have sentimental value for me.
That's great.
239 is The Collector, 2009. A desperate man is in the act of robbing an isolated mansion, believing the owners are away on vacation, only to discover that they have been taken hostage by a serial killer who has booby-trapped the house. A vicious and visceral, often overlooked horror thriller. 238. Fargo by the Coen brothers. The Coen brothers' fake true story. Frances McDormand, William H. Macy, and Steve Buscemi are awesome. Oh,
yeah.
Eh? I didn't say too much about that one because I was like, I figured you were going to talk about it. And also, most people, I think, know Fargo.
It is not on my list.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah, cool. That's fine.
Well, if you have anything to add.
I don't really have much. I mean, like, it's just a twisty crime drama. I like it. I love her pregnant belly as she's going about her police duties. 237. Batman Mask of the Phantasm, which is in my Batman the Animated Series collection. There we go. Mask of the Phantasm. A spinoff of Batman the Animated Series, we flash back to year one and get a truly emotional love story and one of the best original villains who holds her own with the Joker.
Oh, yeah.
So I just enjoy that one. 236, I also don't have a copy of. It is the short A Trip to the Moon, 1902. George Méliès' sci-fi Flight of Fancy, a glorious short. I prefer my version, which is painted with color and is set to Elton John's Rocket Man.
Awesome.
So yeah,
that's also on YouTube, right?
Yes, and so far has not been taken down even once. So
that's great.
I love to watch that one. I like try and watch the original now, and I'm like, no, it's in black and white, and there's no Elton John.
I have to say this is going really good. I'm enjoying this.
Yeah. Oh no, yeah, this is fun.
As I have none of those on my list, so that's great.
Hell yeah.
My turn, right?
Yeah.
All right. 240, Dances with Wolves from 1990. Kevin Costner's epic. A Civil War soldier chooses to leave his lifestyle and join the Lakota Indians. Beautiful scenery. It is a very long movie, maybe too long, but I enjoy it the more I watch it. Next one is number 239. Somewhere in Time, 1980. In 1972, playwright Richard Collier, Christopher Reeve, becomes fascinated by a photo of Eliza McKenna, played by Jane Seymour, who was turn-of-the-century stage actress. She was well before his time. So he figures out how to time travel through hypnosis and basically wills himself back in time to find her, which sounds really kind of stupid, but this movie pulls it off. Sweeping romantic movie, great score, And I actually have been at the Grand Hotel where it was shot on Mackinac Island. So it's kind of I have that sentimental value. So my grandpa and I snuck in. So, and he was explaining to me like, oh, they shot this part here. I hadn't seen the movie. And I was like 8 years old. And he was telling me like, this is where they shot this. Let's go up this garden staircase. Like we were not supposed to be there, like down there. And it's like, we snuck in, we signed the guest book and we left. So
that's awesome.
Somewhere in Time has always been that nostalgia pick. Oh, all right. The next one is 238 Red State from 2011. Three horny teenagers are seduced and kidnapped by the Five Points Trinity Church and are confronted by their pastor, Aben Cooper, played beautifully by Michael Parks. This was a controversial change of pace for Kevin Smith when it came out. I wish that he would dive more into the horror genre again. Looks like he's going to probably keep repeating the same stuff with Jane, Silent Bob, but that's okay too. But I think this is one of his underappreciated movies. And the title, I don't know, I guess it doesn't really age well, but I think it fits for the movie.
Mm-hmm. I think it aged pretty well.
237 is Nightcrawler from 2014. Mm-hmm. Lewis Bloom, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, gives up his life of petty crimes for a career in law. A career in the news as a cameraman. Freelance. This movie is a creepy, fast-paced look at crime reporting. Who can get to the scene first? Jake Gyllenhaal gives a haunting performance as Lewis Bloom. Rene Russo plays a TV network who takes Lewis Bloom under her wing just for a ratings boost. And then things get crazy. Definitely recommend Nightcrawler if you guys haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah.
And 236 is another nostalgia pick, mid-90s from 2018. Jonah Hill directs this movie about a group of skateboarders in 90s LA. The story is told through a 13-year-old boy's eyes, journey through how to learn how to skate, how to be part of the group, and he's just trying to escape his life at home. And I thought it was a nice movie, and we actually saw it in the middle of your feature film debut. So,
yeah. I don't know if you went actually.
Never mind.
No, I didn't go, but I saw it later.
Okay.
Yeah. Hell yeah. No, that one's fun. Okay, cool.
All right.
235 is Everything Everywhere All at Once. From the Daniels comes a wild, warm, and epic comedy that deals with multiverse, family, philosophy, and bagels. Fantastic cast headed by Michelle Yeoh, Hot Dog Fingers.
And it probably just won most of the Oscars.
Yeah, it might win Best Picture tonight. We don't know yet. This will definitely air after the Oscars.
It probably won.
I hope so. It was my favorite of the nominees by a good margin. Although, like, I do like the other ones. Don't get me wrong, but like, I just like that one better. Okay. So this one is another multi-one, but I only brought one of them because I wouldn't be able to hold them all. 234, the Marvel Cinematic Universe Infinity Saga.
Oh, it's like 23
films that tell the story of Iron Man and the Avengers defeating the Titan Thanos. Incredible highs. And implied in my placement on this list, I'm discarding the movies I don't care for, which changes day to day. But like right now, I guess like Incredible Hulk, Captain Marvel, like those I don't really care about. But the dynamic of them all together, I think, really works to create a really satisfying ending, and it's just very well done. 233, The Wizard of Oz.
Oh.
I never got my Blu-ray back. I lent it to somebody who's in a play. So I'm using Vinny's DVD.
If you're listening, give it back.
There's no way she's going to listen to this. But you never know. Victor Fleming's Technicolor masterpiece starring Judy Garland with a terrifying turn by Margaret Hamilton is The Witch of the West. Just a delightful movie.
You might as well pick up the 4K now.
Honestly, that is my plan, actually, at some point to just buy that. 232, The Mummy, 1932. After Frankenstein, Boris Karloff starred as Imhotep, a high priest of Egypt, cursed as a living mummy for attempting to bring his love back from the dead. Some genuinely haunting moments and a wonderful performance from Karloff.
Oh, yeah. I watched it last night. The new 4K. That was amazing.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you're serious? Fuck yeah.
I'm serious. I watched The Mummy last night. Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. I love
the double mummy, The Mummy and Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh, hell yeah. Bride of Frankenstein is also on my list, much higher, but yeah.
So you didn't group those?
No, I mean, I did have them initially, like, but what I ended up doing is I ranked, like, each of the ones individually, except for Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein share a spot, because they're the same director, same cast. I feel like they're, Bride of Frankenstein is a direct continuation. The tone's a little campier, but, like, overall, they're basically on a level for me. But every all the other ones I like have in separate slots if I included them.
I hadn't seen Bride of Frankenstein. It kind of made me tear up at one point. So.
Oh, well, what part was it?
The friend part.
Oh, yeah.
With the blind guy. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I don't know why this is happening, but I'm like, oh, I feel it.
I love his despair with We Belong Dead. Yeah. That part. Yeah. But yeah, a really good movie. 231, The Name of the Rose, a murder mystery set as Franciscan Abbey in the Middle Ages, starring Sean Connery and F. Murray Abraham, Christian Slater, and Ron Perlman, based on the novel by Umberto Eco. A well-done mystery, great performances, and a very good adaptation.
That's the first one I've never heard of on your list so far.
Yeah, I like this one. I read the book in like 2014, and then like, I was like, oh, they made a movie. Let me see it, which this is really hard to get a hold of. But finally watched, like when I was able to watch it, I was like, oh, this is actually pretty good. I like this, the director, Jean-Jacques Annauld. I never remember his name, but he did Enemy at the Gates, which I almost included on the list. I like that one too. Yeah. So yeah, that's
awesome. 231. My 235 is The Matrix, 1999. Red pill or blue pill? This movie changed the way action scenes were filmed. This movie was way ahead of its time as far as technology. It is by far the best installment of this franchise. And 234 is National Lampoon's Animal House. College frat comedy from the 70s, a star vehicle for John Belushi. And I forgot to write the rest of the sentence, I guess. But it's it just says and. But yeah, there's a lot of great moments here led by Belushi and great music and just the fun. If you're looking for like something to go with, maybe Old School was like sort of the newer version of this. Even though Old School is now 20 years old. So, but
oh god,
Animal House is a frat movie. Started the National Lampoon's type stuff, you know, that was big in the 70s and 80s movies. Mm-hmm. Next one is 233, X2, X-Men United from 2023. The first X-Men movie I ever watched. I ended up going to see it in high school, and then it was sold out, so we decided to do like a double feature of Holes and X-Men X2. Anyways, the Nightcrawler opening scene still holds up to me. Love that scene. The movie builds upon everything from the first X-Men, and the mutants band together to take down William Stryker, played by the great Brian Cox. I still think it's one of the best X-Men movies.
Yeah, I agree
with that. Next one is 232. It is from 2016, La La Land. Beautifully choreographed, directed with an ending that's always leaving me in tears. An honest portrayal about two people chasing their dreams. I haven't even opened this up yet, but this is the.
I see it's still in the plastic.
The latest steelbook. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
All right, and can't have this is my pairing. Can't have La La Land without Moonlight. Moonlight from 2016. forever linked to La La Land. This is the best picture winner. It's told in three heartbreaking chapters of Chiron's life, beautifully crafted film by Barry Jenkins. This is from the library that I bought recently. So glad to have it on Blu-ray.
That's so funny that you paired those two.
Well, I was like, you know what? I just might as well.
Yeah, that's really funny.
Yeah, that's wow, we're getting close to the last stack here.
Okay. So is it
230.
230? Okay, cool. My 230 is Apocalypto. Mel Gibson's epic of ancient Mexico, a group of villagers is rounded up to be sacrificed, but one of them escapes to rescue his wife and son. I wish Gibson had used the Aztecs instead of the Mayans, as that would have made it slightly more believable, but the visceral impact of the film is undeniable, and there isn't another movie like it.
Yeah, that's true. That Blu-ray is hard to find, too.
It is. It's kind of, it's like out of stock. It's out of print, yeah. Which I wish they would just put out the 4K, because that film is worth it, honestly. But 239, The Sting. George Roy Hill's second film to star Paul Newman and Robert Redford sees the pair in Prohibition Chicago, where they decided to run a con on a notorious gangster who had their friend killed. Subtle yet cheeky and playful, The Sting delivers a surprising twist ending.
Nice.
My stack fell, finally. I'll pick that up after. 238. Titanic. James Cameron's period romance epic, which turns into a survival movie in the second half, starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet. It's a marvel of cinematic and emotional filmmaking on a grand scale. I was surprised at how much I liked this one before I saw it. I thought, this will be whatever. And then I was like, no, I really like this movie.
My grandparents covered my eyes during the drawing part in theaters. So I didn't get to see the best part.
Oh, okay. 227, Sleeping Beauty, 1959. Disney's animated adaptation of the fairy tale is so iconic and artfully rendered. The backgrounds are exquisite, and Maleficent is magnificent as one of the best Disney villains. The dragon battle climax is superb.
Nice, yeah.
And then I'm pretty sure this one's going to be higher on your list. Number 226, Blade Runner, the final cut. From Philip K. Dick's Do Android Dream of Electronic Sheep comes Ridley Scott's Blade Runner, starring Harrison Ford as a replicant hunter who may be a replicant himself, a meditation on humanity while simultaneously being a brooding and beautiful sci-fi film noir. The final cut / any non-theatrical cut version is essential.
Yeah.
Unless you want to hear Harrison Ford's
stupid voiceover
saying the N-word.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, he does kind of rape her on screen, so like he's not like a good person, but still, it's kind of like, wow, this is sort of out of nowhere. There's not even a black person in the scene.
Yeah. It's, you know, and the fact that they recorded that voiceover after the fact. You know,
yeah. Kind of... Oh, yeah. Harrison Ford sounds like he does not want to be here. Yeah. Like, he's really annoyed that they brought him in for it.
Yeah. I bet the studio was like, we don't understand it. So let's have a voiceover. man. All right. I mean,
apparently, they were going to do a voiceover for 2001. And you're like, oh, God, that would have been terrible.
Yeah, that would have been. 230 for me.
Yeah.
So that was it for you, right? That was.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
okay.
That's 226 through 250.
Wow. Nice. Well done. I really liked that selection.
Yeah. I was really happy with it.
My 230 is Booksmart from 2019. Olivia Wilde's directorial debut. Two academic overachievers decide they want to let loose before high school is over forever. There's a stop-motion scene that I particularly love of a female fantasy and the Female Anatomy, and many, many other hilarious moments. A true Gen Z comedy for today's youth. 229 is a remake for like the fourth time, I believe. I don't know, maybe three or four times. A Star is Born from 2018. A wonderful directed film by Bradley Cooper. Lady Gaga's performance carries this remake. It might just be the best version of A Star is Born. I haven't seen them all, but I particularly like this one. Next one is has my name in it. 228, Dan in Real Life from 2007. Dan writes an advice column, but can't seem to apply it to his own life. He's a widow raising three daughters. On his way to a family vacation, he falls for a woman at a bookstore, of course. Turns out she's engaged to his brother, of course. Steve Carell proves he's more than just a supporting comedic actor at this point. 227 is a movie that I find fascinating. Monster from 2003, based on a true story of a prostitute who turns into a serial killer. Charlize Theron gives the best performance of her career, in my opinion. It is a haunting movie that's not for everyone, but I'm always like captivated by every frame. Also, Patty Jenkins' first film.
Oh, really?
Yep. And 226, you'll appreciate this one. It is Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors. It's part of the collection I have. During an incident, young Christian Parker, Patricia Arquette, is slit her wrist and slashed by a dream-stalking monster, Freddy Krueger. Her mother, mistaking the wounds for a suicide attempt, sends Kristen to a psychiatric ward where she joins a group of similarly troubled teens. One of the doctors there is Nancy Thompson, I believe from the first film, who has battled Freddy some years before. So I thought it was a fascinating. It's people say it's the best villain of the series.
It's the best sequel for sure.
Yeah, the best sequel for sure.
Well, and you know why? Because Wes Craven came back to write it.
There you go.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, that was a great first episode. I think both our lists are different. And we might have some of the films higher than each other, but we'll see.
I think I have like two of yours higher up. But other than that, I don't think there's any crossover.
Yeah, I have two of yours higher up too. I can't. I won't tell you which ones, but you might be able to guess them. But yeah, it's this is gonna be fun. I'm excited to do this again, and it's less painful doing the presentation and doing the actual show than writing the list for me anyway.
Oh, for sure, same. I mean, you know, like I actually like once the list was done, it was kind of fun writing out what I wanted to say about each one. Because I don't think I only have like a few sentences for each one. Like none of them are very long, but.
Can I ask you one question? Do you have any other movies from the past year on here besides Everything Everywhere All at Once?
I do actually.
Okay.
I do too.
I was just curious because you had that one lower than I thought. Maybe you thought maybe you'd have that one maybe the next episode or something. That's my only.
I mean, yeah, like I like that one a lot. I think it might grow on me. Right now, I do like it a lot. I like it better than Swiss Army Man, which is not on here. But I have three other movies from this year.
Oh yeah, you had Terrifier 2.
Oh yeah, yeah, I forgot about that one already. So actually, there's four other ones. Yeah. Well, Terrifier 2.
I have two from last year.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. Terrifier, I think, is going to grow on me, too, because, like, I truly think that Art the Clown is another horror icon, and that in 10, 20 years, we're going to look at him the same way we do, like, Freddy Krueger. Well, definitely, like, up there, for sure.
Yeah, I think you could be right. seems like the movies have, I haven't seen them, but it seems like Terrifier 1 kind of built off of the Terrifier 1 is a spinoff, right, of another movie.
Yeah, it's a spinoff of Hallows Eve, which I haven't seen. I do own it. I haven't watched it yet. But yeah, like it was a spinoff. So this is actually like he's appeared in three different movies. Plus, he made a short before All Hallows Eve.
And now the success of Terrifier 2, I'm sure they're going to get a bigger budget, maybe a wider release too. So I can see it building that way.
Yeah. Well, and like the difference between Terrifier 1 and 2 is insane. Like, okay. I mean, like Terrifier 1, like looks like they had $10 and they shot it in a warehouse that somebody gave them for free. Not to say that that's like a problem, really. I mean, like, I think they made a fantastic film considering what looks like a very low budget. But Terrifier 2 is like, oh, they got a proper camera and like they have enough budget for like pretty kind of insane set pieces considering like it's not that expensive of a movie. I think you're right that they can get more money and like keep going. And it's one of the rare horror franchises where I think it's improved between 1 and 2. So like I think that's a good sign that like 3 will be like keep going with it. Whereas like A Nightmare on Elm Street, 1 and 3 are good and the rest of them are fine. 7's good too.
Yeah, I like that's the new Nightmare, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like 2 is fun because it's so gay.
The original Scream Queen.
Yeah. And then 4, 5, and 6 kind of run together for me. I mean, like, they're not bad. I don't think there's a bad Nightmare on Elm Street film, but, you know, even the remake.
The practical effects are amazing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're really good. I mean, like, some of them are just like, oh, okay, that was a really creative kill. Like, after, like, 3, you don't really, like, I don't really care for the characters. I mean, like, I don't care about them. But it's still kind of fun to watch those.
All right. Well, that'll do it for episode 1 of this mini series of Top 250. So thanks everybody for joining us and stay tuned for the next episode, which will air next week.
Woo!
Peace out.
Peace out. Thanks for listening.
For more Return of the Disc, visit returnofthedisc.com. Check out the audio version of today's show, available on all major podcast platforms. And be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel.